Hammurabi's subjects believed that he was genuinely concerned for their well-being. They made him a god. When we've seen rulers become divine before, usually it comes from themselves. They decide that they are gods. But Hammurabi's people, probably subjects who lived in the southern Mesopotamian cities that had become more used to the idea that a ruler would be divine, initiated this concept. Children were named after Hammurabi. One young man was named Hammurabi Ili, which means Hammurabi is my god. And there are several other names of children that include Hammurabi's name in them. This will happen occasionally with other rulers, but Hammurabi is unique in the number of examples of what seem to be genuine honors given to him by his people. And his long reign, almost 50 years, would help strengthen this loyalty to him and also the bureaucracy that he had created. You can imagine that when Hammurabi died, some people had never known any other king, so it would be an enormous loss. This longevity, in connection with Hammurabi's concern for justice and peace for his people, was remembered for centuries after his death, and some later sources draw on these themes to describe him. We've seen praise poems for rulers before, specifically Shulgi, but the praise poems for Hammurabi really do focus on his concern for justice. One writes that he gives the disobedient the death sentence, and he is the great net that covers evil intent. Remember that gods would go onto the battlefield with a battle net to capture their enemies. And now the idea has moved moved to the concept that the king carries a battle net against injustice. The peace and prosperity of Hammurabi's rule are also emphasized in these later sources, and it's somewhat ironic that they came at the cost of rather extensive warfare. Some later rulers would even use Hammurabi as a model for their own rule, so they would describe themselves as, like Hammurabi, I too am interested in justice. Like Hammurabi, I too will bring peace to the region. Hammurabi's reign was clearly successful, and his law code monument has ensured his fame over the generations. The dynasty he established would continue for another century and a half or so. It did prosper as it had during Hammurabi's rule. There are not as many sources for his successors, and other states in the Near East were becoming much more powerful. So in 1595 BC, the city of Babylon was attacked and destroyed by invaders from Anatolia, ending the Amorite dynasty that Hammurabi had brought to such great power. Hammurabi created the largest state since the Akkadian king Naram-Sin in the 23rd century BC. His long rule helped to unify the region politically in a way that the Akkadians had never been able to achieve. And the old loyalty to the city-state was finally broken down, and this would never return. Now, a new form of political unit, the territorial or regional state, was established. The king would live in a capital city, and that would be the main focal point of the state. This shift that occurs during Hammurabi's reign is a significant break in our history of Mesopotamia, and it's going to lay the foundation for the large empires of the first millennium BC. You may also recall in an earlier lecture that I discussed the prominence of Marduk, the patron deity of Babylon, who would replace Enlil as the king of the gods. Even though Hammurabi did not promote the cult of Marduk specifically, it would start to spread in the reign of his successors and eventually dominate Babylonia, becoming its most important cult. All kings of successor states would need to take part in the Babylonian New Year's festival, So this indicates for us the religious and cultural primacy of Babylonia and would continue long after its political dominance fell. In the next lecture, we will continue to study the events of Hammurabi's reign, in this case from the perspective of his ally and later enemy, Zimri-Lim, the king of Mari.